What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Managing Editor Sherlyn Lowe. Hi.
New title, Sherlyn. Hello. Hello. Well, welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always...
We just need to shout it every time.
Always awkward for me, but it's nice to say, I guess. Kind of strange, but yes.
It is. You say it out loud. You are what you, I don't know, what you put into the world. But yes.
Thank you.
Managing Editor Sherlyn Lowe, we are here to talk about the iPhone 16e, which was the successor to the iPhone SE that we were all waiting for. Mm. I remember last week, Sherlyn was like refreshing Apple's homepage like a madwoman, waiting for some sort of information to drop.
Every day.
It's here. Mm. It's not an SE. It's a very different phone. And I think in some ways a very troubling one, especially when it comes to the price, because it's $599. So we'll talk about all that. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. And join us Thursday mornings at around 11 a.m. Eastern for our live stream, where you can ask us questions, see us screw up once in a while and make mistakes. That's fun. And if we have gadgets on hand, we can show them off too. But it's mostly the Q&A. Join for that. So the iPhone 16e is here, and I don't know, like, what your experience... Like, did you just, like... Were you following the news along with all of us, Sherlyn, when they dropped the YouTube thing?
Oh, the video from Apple? Mm-hmm. I didn't... You know what's funny? Because I was so busy immediately trying to put up all the articles, right, that, like, I didn't actually watch the video.
Yeah,
I read...
I didn't either. Yeah.
Yeah, I read the press release. So all the clues and all the online rumors initially pointed to the week before, and then following that pointed to February 19th as the most likely day.
Right, right.
So I think we were on the high alert given everything that we have known to be true in the past. And so when it happened, it was like, okay, here we go. But I think I want to shout out our team. I was very proud to see that we were super well prepared. Like, you know, Nate on the news team and Aaron and our other writers, we all had people prepping stuff ahead of time. And so that's why Engadget was able to get a lot of articles up right as the news was announced. And Will Shanklin did a lot of the meaty bulk of the posts, like the announcement and everything like that. So the funny thing is we all thought it was going to be the iPhone SE 4, mm-hmm. like you said, Devendra.
Or fourth gen, yeah.
Right, the fourth gen. I mean, the last time an iPhone SE was announced was 2022. So it's been 3 years. And well, almost 3 years. And so a lot of the work I was doing was changing body copy in the articles we had prepped to, instead of saying iPhone SE 4, change it all to iPhone 16e, which was, you know, what do you think what does that name mean to you, Devendra, you know?
I mean, it's just, you can tell what it is. Like when Apple does this, right, there was the 5C, mm-hmm. right? Just mm-hmm. like the slight variation. So like, hey, here's a cheaper iPhone with a color case, right? Cheaper plastic color
right.
case.
Sure.
Stuff like that. When they had the mini line, the names all mean something. And I feel like SE was always just like, hey, we have this old hardware hanging around and some people want a cheaper phone. So here you go, mm-hmm. you like losers who don't want the mainstream iPhone. It always felt like a device that Apple never really wanted you to buy. And it was just like aesthetically very different. And this one just seems like, it feels like they do want people to buy it, but it is so expensive, right? The last SE was $429. The other ones were cheaper than that too. The sub $500 level for smartphones is kind of a great sweet spot for a lot of people. For people who don't want to overspend on new hardware, for people who are buying something for their kids, like for a teenager phone, actually pretty good there too. There are a lot of reasons to want to not spend close to $1,000 for a smartphone. And I thought it was cool that Apple was still playing there. Samsung's doing it. Google's doing it. Everyone's doing it. Now, no more. And I think the dream of a sub $500 iPhone is just completely gone now, because this thing is $599. It's $200 less than the iPhone 16 proper. And I think the price is a problem for me, even though it has a lot of good hardware. But what do you think about it, Sherlyn? Because what is this phone specifically?
Yeah. So like you said, right, this is the iPhone 16e. It's $200 less than the iPhone 16. So it's at $599. So that one's $799. And they're both 6.1-inch phones. The iPhone 16e now has an OLED screen. It's got ceramic shield, no more home button. The design that followed phones with the home buttons is no longer there, right? You don't have A, you don't have Touch ID with the home button, but B, you now have that notch, which houses
you got
that,
the notch.
Yeah, you got the notch back. You know, you didn't think in 2025 we would see another notch phone, a new phone with a notch instead of that dynamic island pill. But that's what we got. But I think there's a lot of noteworthy little things about the iPhone 16e to point out, and I'll get to my most the thing that intrigued me the most. But we also have
I
to point out.
I can bet what it is. Too,
okay, okay. I'll give you a chance to tell me what it is before I say it. But I want to list out a few more things, which is obviously this is a phone for Apple Intelligence, so it's got Apple Intelligence support in there. It's got the A18 chip. It's got no MagSafe, which rattled some people, and I think we'll spend some time talking about that in a little bit. It's got USB-C, so goodbye to Lightning. And then
48 megapixel web camera.
I know, 48 megapixel single rear camera. I mean, up front, you've got the true depth.
Hey, they're calling it a 2-in-1, even though it's just a 2X crop. Don't even try this, Apple.
It's
don't
so
even
funny.
Try this.
Yeah, a rear camera.
Wow, look, our camera can crop in photos. Amazing. Yes.
And so that was like just a few things, right? But I am intrigued by it. And I'll let you say what it is you think I'm about to say, Devendra. What do you think I'm intrigued by the most?
I think it's a little thing called the C1 that Apple has finally developed its own modem. And I know someone enough to know we have covered like weird little technical, you know, broadband and smartphone stuff, like especially when it comes to telecom hardware. So, hey! Apple has its own modem, and Trillin is excited.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm so weird about this, because I was like trying to get our team to, I was like, we should write about the C1. Why are we writing about the C1? I think I'm
It's very mid in terms of like what it actually is. But
I know,
okay.
I'm quite nerdy. The funny thing about this one, so to spell it out for everyone listening and watching, the C1 is Apple's first like own Apple designed modem. They no longer had to like use one from like Qualcomm, for example. And this supports 5G, it supports eSIM, it supports dual eSIM, and one physical SIM still. I need to double check the spec list. But the funny thing is it supports only like sub-6 5G and not millimeter wave 5G. So that's curious. Interestingly,
so that's no Verizon.
Well, but Verizon is still selling the 16E, which is interesting to me.
The Verizon still has sub-6, right? So you just can't touch the fastest Verizon speeds. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And so that's like, I thought it was newsworthy, right? That like Apple made its own modem, and like, are we going to see a future version of this on future iPhones, maybe the 17? But I also think that something about the C1 is interesting. They tout the power efficiency of the C1 as like so good, it dramatically improves the battery life of the iPhone 16e over the iPhone 16. So like until we get to test that out, we don't know for sure, but the battery life of the 16e is supposed to be a lot better because of that.
Well, I think if you're just like discounting millimeter wave entirely, which is the cellular that really eats your battery, then sure, yes, you can claim you're better or you're faster on cellular and have longer battery life.
But
right?
Like, I mean, were we always, like only Verizon in the US, right, had millimeter wave 5G broadly available to people? I can't remember. I mean, there's sub-6 and then there's like the mid-range. I think that T-Mobile.
It's like the old CDMA folks, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's curious to see. I think millimeter wave alone, I think maybe the combined battery efficiency between the A18 and the C1 might be doing something. And the display while OLED might still not have certain like features. I still can't remember offhand the refresh rate, but...
It's still 60 hertz. Come on. Even the iPhone, the plain iPhone 16 is 60
it's
hertz,
probably,
right?
It's so like 60 hertz.
Apple's not going to go crazy with that. Whenever they make their own hardware, it's more efficient. It plays nicely with everything they have. So
exactly.
This seems like this is the common story. What is kind of funny is that this phone is sort of like a test case that they're just putting out there and seeing like, well, does our modem catch fire? Does anything stupid happen when we develop our own modem? So.
Yeah.
We will see, because not as many people are going to buy this as other phones. So if they have to deal with any issues, it's not going to hit a large amount of users, you know?
A quick A quick shout out. So a lot of chat on our live stream, people are bringing up very relevant points, but I want to shout out RuinDig says that looking at the specs, they saw that the 16E has a 4-core GPU, which is one down from the 5-core GPU on the iPhone 16, yes. Which is true.
Yes.
And we noticed this as well. I mean, Devendra, you're more up on GPUs than I am. Like, what do you think this means for the iPhone 16E?
It's just, it'll be slightly slower. That's all. Like
on
the
games.
From what we've seen, like
okay.
Some games, like we really have to test it to see, like, Lies of P, you know, the big games that run on a lot of that really have need demanding hardware. I really would be interested to see how the more powerful games like that and the Resident Evils that are on the App Store, how they perform on this phone. You know, you're not going to, somebody buying this phone is not buying it to be a gaming device.
Right.
I'm sure it'll still play like small mobile games just fine. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen there. Apple's GPUs are really capable. This is not 60 hertz. Like, if you can make a game render lower and run close to 60 FPS there, sure, it'll be fine. Worth pointing out, though, this thing has the A18 chip, right? So it's fully baked and ready for Apple Intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the main reason it's also so expensive. Like, it is arguably a very capable version of a cheaper iPhone, right? Because it's no longer a home button. It is a much bigger screen because the old SE had like the 4.7 inch with the home button. You've got the notch there. It's a higher quality camera. There are a lot of good reasons to say, like, hey, this is actually a pretty good upgrade from the SE. But I think the dream of whatever the SE used to represent, which was a smaller phone and also one that was more affordable, I think that is fully dead.
Yeah.
Because $599, no matter how you cut it, I remember when the plain iPhone was just $599, you know, the non-pro models.
Oh my God.
So
yeah.
I feel like we will never see a sub-$500 iPhone again.
Yeah.
That's certainly true. Well, and it also feels like they're just getting us ready for, like, okay, next year's iPhone 17 is going to be $850. And then the next year it's going to be $900, you know, and we're going to creep up and up and up. And whenever an iPhone foldable hits, folks, that is going to be $2,000. Like, Apple's just going to straight up do that. And then you add all the storage into that. Like, we could have a $3,000 iPhone spec'd out, you know, within 5 years for some folks. And that is scary to me and not great for consumers. Yeah.
I want to point out, Declan in our chat says that it's $1,000 Canadian. It is wild. And to your point, like, yeah, the goodbye to the small iPhone, that's really sad to me. Like, we really loved the iPhone mini when there was the last one was 12, I think. And then the SE was the last small one. But I will say that
there was a 14 mini, because when I was looking up our old reviews of the last SE and you compared it to a 14 mini.
Really? Sorry.
Yes.
Screamed into the thing.
You did that.
14 mini. Well, I must be remembering it wrong then. I think maybe the 13 mini.
Maybe the 13 mini.
13
maybe
mini. Okay, we were both like just edging around it. Anyway, the small phone for me is where I'm a bit sad to see it go. But I guess the 6.1 inch isn't such a bad size, isn't
it? It's
huge.
Not that, like, once you remove the bezels and you remove the home button and all those things, like, yes, it is. This is a perfectly easy phone to hold it. So I always feel like the small phone demands and stuff. I know some people have small hands. Nobody was buying those MIDI phones, and you take a huge battery hit for that. So I don't know. I feel like this particular size is a good balance for a lot of hand types. I don't know how you feel, Shirley, like, when it comes to managing phones.
I would like, I mean, currently I use the, so remember last year with the 16 Pro series, I was just really excited because the 16 Pro finally reached sort of feature or camera parity with the 16 Pro Max, because before that I had been mainlining the iPhone 15 Pro Max, which was a bit too huge, but like finally got the magnesium body so it lost weight and had the like 5x telephoto zoom, which is really what I wanted for all that wildlife photography I do in my free time. Now I can use a 16 Pro, and the 16 Pro is basically the same size as the 16, which is the same size as the 16E. So I manage that better, right? I have a bit, like, my hands are a bit smaller. But I don't know. I think that the SE was on its last legs anyway. That design of no, like, not a full screen, not an all-face screen, the home button, as much as I miss one, like, I think it looks super dated. And so I understand.
Well, don't forget the very first SE was also an iPhone 5 throwback, remember? Like,
yeah,
that was the iPhone
and then
5
recently
case.
We
were like,
eight,
oh,
right?
I missed
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I missed that so much, actually.
Yeah,
so they're
I know.
Always kind of going back a little. I want to get the perspective, though. Our podcast producer, Ben Elman, has been the person with the most experience with an iPhone SE. And I know you're on the lookout for a new iPhone, Ben. What do you think of this? And it, preface, we were talking about this earlier. I told them, do not buy this phone. Please.
Yeah, I'm really curious who the 16E versus the 16 base model is for now. Can you tell me?
That's a good question. Like, what do you think, Shirlin? Because I've had, I'll tell you, people who are like Asian markets. There are people who want cheaper phones, who can't afford like the best iPhone, but they want something close to it. Sure, that's sort of something. They also said, like, I think it was Rohan Bade on Twitter who mentioned, like, the fast wireless charging, MagSafe, those are things, like, some markets, like, especially in India and some Asian countries, like, they're not really taking advantage of. I have thoughts on that, but go ahead, Shirlin.
Sorry, I took a screenshot because of some FedEx shenanigans. I will say this, my spidey sense, which is my code word for I can't tell you how I know, says that maybe Apple was looking at people who are either brand new to iPhone to consider the 16E versus the 16, or people who are upgrading from much older iPhone or iPhone SE.
So you mean me?
A bit more modern. I mean, it might be you. You know, depending on how invested you are in like a dual camera system, which we can talk a bit more about, I'm sure. But people would want to spend all that extra money, which is like justifiably right now $200. And I don't know how you finance your phone, Ben, but like if it's over 2 years, $200 might not be that much. Or if you're paying up front, then $200 is that much. So
that's not a big gulf. Price-wise.
Right. So. Oh, especially with financing.
It's a bigger gulf price-wise if you're talking about international prices. But I was talking with a friend yesterday, and they said, like, pricing this at $600 USD is going to make it really unreachable for a lot of the other Asian markets you were just talking about, especially a place like India, where a lot of people don't make $600 a month.
It's certainly expensive. Everywhere else that we see. I mean, look, barring the political climate, I think people are already like avoiding US products anyway, kind of. And this barring talk of inflation, all of this stuff, right? It's like, do we think, I mean, to your point, you think that this is the precursor to just general raised prices across the iPhone lineup next launch season. So
I think it sets a new standard. Of like, this is the cheap iPhone, $600. If we make the next iPhone $50 more, keep the cheaper one at $600, then it starts to seem like a better deal. Mm-hmm. That is my thinking. Yeah. And I'm sure that's what Apple wants, right? Like, Apple didn't want people to buy the SEs because the SEs will lower the average sales price for their per unit, APU. And that is a big thing for investors. Like, they don't actually want to sell cheap devices with low margins. They want to sell expensive devices with a higher margin so it makes them more money. Like, that's the ultimate thing. Also, good question, who is this phone for? Why does it have an OLED screen? I love OLED screens. I will champion OLED screens forever. But when I'm in the framework of, like, if I were designing, we need to make an affordable iPhone that is accessible to a lot of people, OLED screen would not be the thing I put in there. There are so many, there are cheaper LCDs at this point that can still look really good. And it's wild that they put an OLED in there, 48 megapixel camera, and no MagSafe, that just a magnet in this thing, and wireless charge. Like, that is weird.
Yeah, we're getting to what I really want to ask everyone listening and watching about, which is like, what of all these omissions / choices bothers you the most, right? Set aside the fact that it's more expensive than ever, by about $180 or $170. No MagSafe. I feel like I might be too much of a nerd for being bothered about it because, like, I ask like other people in my life, they're like, okay, so what is up with this new iPhone? And I'm like, they have USB-C, but no lightning, no home button, now Face ID, and then like no MagSafe. And like, people literally ask me, people who've been using iPhone forever ask me, what is MagSafe? And I'm like, maybe it doesn't bother everyone the way it bothers me. So like,
a lot of people aren't aware of these things. Like,
right.
That's just,
but maybe they know what it is. They don't know the name, right? You can't use your pop sockets or the magnetic pop sockets anyway. You can't use these charging accessories that are magnetic.
Right. They may not know the name, but
I think the
people who use those accessories. Go ahead.
Right. The other things on my list is like omissions are no double or dual rear camera, or also no support for a millimeter wave. Like, which of these matters most to y'all? You either send them to us, podcast@engadget.com.
It's the cameras for me.
Okay, so Ben, as a like actual owner of iPhone SE, wants another camera as part of this upgrade decision-making process.
Yeah, cool. And I think I mentioned this in a past episode that a couple of years ago, I was looking at like new apartments here in New York City, and I felt like I was really constrained by the lack of an ability to do a wide angle shot so I could show the entire width of the room in one picture. I felt like I had to take a video and sweep across just to give people an idea.
Panorama or something.
Well, I mean, not so much a panorama, but like take a video so you could see, you know, a proper or get a proper feel for it. I'm not saying that like wide angle is also perfect, because it does tend to make things look a little bigger than they would otherwise be. That's like MySpace angles, but for real estate.
I think that would actually be like a skewed way to record a potential apartment, because then you don't understand like how deep or how big a room
but
is at times.
Yeah, I really want to be able to take wider angle pictures. And so I understand like, hey, that might be the thing that you pay the extra $200 for. You get two more cameras.
I think we had a piece about that, right? Like you should have better cameras for this price. Yeah.
Are you talking about Igor's piece, Dev?
Igor wrote a piece this morning. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so go to Engadget.com, read the piece about great cameras, not Apple Intelligence, is what people want from an iPhone 16e. And he points out, but I want to clarify for everyone what this like, quote, two-in-one fusion camera really means. It is a single camera, single sensor, but the two-in-one is Apple doing some cropping to give you this illusion of a 2x telephoto option. So it's a digital zoom built in using the like the high resolution sensor. I mean, it's 48 megapixels. You do get like a lot more detail. And based on, you know, people who's ever used some kind of base iPhone, you'll know that this telephoto digital crop situation works well enough, right? You don't get the greatest clarity, but you do get something. But to Ben's point, and to kind of contextualize this for everyone, if you look at the sub $500 Android phone market, you easily find at least dual, if not triple, and sometimes quad camera systems for under $500. And if it gets even better when you bump it up to the $600 that Apple is asking. Look at a Pixel 8a, look at a Pixel A series phone, or a Samsung FE, or A70 something. There's a lot of options out there with like really good. Can I interest you in an Android, Ben? What's holding you back?
I just like to be in the ecosystem. I've been in the ecosystem for forever. I like getting my texts on my laptop. Like, that's a big, big thing. And it comes back to the idea that Apple is a luxury brand as much as it is a consumer technology company. So it doesn't really matter if this $600 iPhone 16e has fewer specs than you would find from other phones, because you're also buying into the brand of everything.
The ecosystem. That's
you're in the ecosystem. You're starting to buy apps. You're starting to buy accessories or whatever. I will say the price is the big thing for me, but also it is very stupid for this device not to have MagSafe, or at least not to have fast wireless charging, because, folks, I have covered wireless charging since the inception of this stupid technology, and for practically a decade, it was functionally useless, right? It was a thing on the back of your phone. Occasionally, you could put it on a pad on your desk or something, or clamp it into something, and it'll charge your phone slowly. Whoopee. If a cat walks by a nightstand, which has happened to me, and knocks it up slightly off charger, if a kid shakes a table, if like you knock it over in the middle of the night, you wake up to a phone that is not charged. And that is, it's just like a weird, dumb, slow technology. When you see it in cars that have wireless charging, it's just like a pocket for you to put a phone in, and your phone just like dangles all over the place, and you hope it like sits back in that gets back to the wireless coil to stay charging. Generally not a good solution. MagSafe, Qi2, which Apple helped bring the magnet stuff
I'm
into
still
Qi2.
So We've impressed that Apple actually open sourced something for once,
because they understood like to make this useful you want everybody to have it. At the very least, you want this to be a standard. Magnets completely changes the way that wireless charging works.
So Declan in the chat says, MagSafe is close to a deal breaker. The price jump is also huge. The 16E would be a downgrade for me from my 14. Other than Apple Intelligence, it doesn't offer anything, and AI doesn't even work well. That's the tweet.
I think so. I mean, what do you think, Ben?
I mean, yeah. We were just talking about MagSafe. I think MagSafe is pretty important to me if I'm thinking about getting a new phone, because I also really want to try out a lot of those fun third-party devices, a charging stand or something with MagSafe. I think that the way MagSafe attaches to the phone is also just really satisfying. There is a ka-chunk.
It's a great thunk.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to the possibility of like getting a couple of charging pucks that will just like apply to the back of the phone. But let's check in again on how fast MagSafe charging is. How much waste heat is there? Has it gotten a little bit better in the last couple of years?
It's never going to be as good as plugging in your phone, because with fast charging, like if you have a 30 or 45 watt charger, like you're going to be much faster. There's going to be more waste. I don't have the exact number. I thought it was like between 10 and 15 watts, Sherlyn.
Yeah.
It's faster than plain wireless.
Yeah, I will tell you that like Apple won't ever announce their charging speeds, I don't think. But there's some like slight difference between the T2 standard speed and the Apple's own like wireless charging speed, if I'm not wrong. Can't remember often, but I think 15 was where the T2 speed was. And then Turbine in the chat is saying 25 watt for 16. That's pretty high if that's wireless. Like a lot. Okay, so for me, my thoughts are that the MagSafe situation seems like a big bummer, but also seems like people outside of Apple don't seem to know how to implement it really well too, because I mean, we've written a few pieces in the last few months about how like the only Android phones that support the magnetic side of T2 is really like the HMD Skyline or something like that. Like just one Android phone. Even Samsung's S25 don't have like built-in magnets to support all of it.
They're like, get the case.
Yeah, get the case. The OnePlus 13, same thing. I think other T2, technically T2 compatible Android phones don't have the magnet support either. So it's very weird. But yeah.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that those folks aren't doing it, but it's like Apple, of all companies, the one that has open source, really shared its technology
that
to do this.
It.
People are telling me like, yes, in India and other places, there's not much use for MagSafe. These are premium, you know, accessories. You pay a little more for those. That's true. That's all true. The way you make this technology cheaper is to make it available more widely in cheaper phones. And Apple itself chose not to do that with the 16E. Even though it has a 48 megapixel camera, has an OLED screen, there's so many other things they could have like done to like control the price of this phone, but not MagSafe. So anyway, that's a minor annoyance. My big annoyance is the price, though. So
yeah,
that's just me.
I will say, and in the like minutes since we asked the question of the live chat, we have a lot of responses that are very, very valid. I think, you know, for Ruindig, super nerd, point out observation here. Ruindig was like, the iPhone 16 Easy USB-C doesn't have DisplayPort, which like, damn, that's a deep, deep cut. Declan says MagSafe is close to a deal breaker. The price jump is also huge. And other than Apple Intelligence, it doesn't really offer you anything. And Apple Intelligence itself doesn't even work well.
Doesn't work well. Yeah.
I don't think it's a huge reason to go to the iPhone 16e to just get Apple Intelligence. And also, Ben, when you said you wanted to text on your laptop, a lot of people wanted to point out that you can also text on your laptop on Android.
I did see that.
And then
you can. It's not as seamless and not as fast, but yes. Also want to point out, like, the whole point of this is like the A18 chip and Apple Intelligence. That's why this thing is so expensive, is because Apple cannot have a new device out here
with no Apple
that doesn't support Apple Intelligence. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Except I like some of those features. It is not a selling point. It's not like a thing that is a must have. But I think because Apple is so committed to it, that's where we are. That's why they have to have the latest chip in here. And that's why they have to like make it so much more expensive. This is just a baffling phone to me. Yeah.
I'll tell you this what. I'll say this much, right? This device is available for pre-order tomorrow and then will be available retail on the 28th. And I'm sure that there will be reviews of this device before the 28th. Like my judge observation of past history of phones like this. So I will say, like, wait for the reviews to come out to see, like, what all these claims of battery performance or improvement of, like, whether Apple Intelligence works well on the Xenia to begin with, whether MagSafe is that huge of a deal breaker, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think we can wait till the full review. But right now, there are clearly glaring omissions and decisions that we're all, like, grappling with. So, I mean,
yeah. I will have a piece coming out that is a rant about the price soon. One thing I mentioned there, though, you can get a sub-$500 iPhone if you buy a used iPhone.
Exactly.
Or buy a refurbished iPhone. So my mom, who for some reason has like an iPhone 7 right now, I think a 7 or 8 Plus, she needs a new phone soon. I'm like, okay, I know what to do. She's not going to go to Carrier. She doesn't need the new stuff. I bought an iPhone 14 Plus on Amazon for like $400. It's a really nice looking phone. It's refurbished. It's in very good condition. That is a good phone. It's large. It has like a big screen so my mom can see it easily. But also, she doesn't need Apple Intelligence. She doesn't need the latest and greatest hardware. $400 iPhone. There you go. So used market is always going to be a good one.
I think, that is definitely the sub-$500 market left for iPhones. And while the used market or the secondary market is a good one, the only issue is that you can't trust supply, right? Like if someone lists it on eBay, then it's gone or something. But, you know.
Don't buy it on eBay. Like, that's my thing. Right. You can buy it on Amazon. There are some really shady-ass companies. Like, their name is Pro Max. The company's name is Pro Max. So you see a listing for, like, a 14 Pro Max on Amazon that's really cheap. I'm like, huh, that's fishy. Don't buy eBay. Apple itself sells refurbished iPhones, but not at, like, the steep discount like these other places do. So be careful. But Amazon's good because you can return it easily if it's, like, not what they say it is. Like, their return policies tend to be pretty good.
Yeah. So stay tuned, I think, for like deeper observations. But send any thoughts you have about the 16E to podcast@engadget.com.
Let's move on to some other news. And, you know, there's a bunch of stuff. I'm just going to try not to stare too hard into the black hole of the real world right now. Trump plans to impose a 25% tariff on automobile and semiconductor imports. This is among the many tariff things the Trump administration has been talking about. We're going to hear more details April 2nd or so, they'll say, the day after April Fools. He's saying they'll be in the neighborhood of 25%. My response to a lot of these things without turning into like a crazy person and rant seems bad. Seems like this would be real bad. I don't know if you have more to add about this, Sherlyn, but this will deeply affect cars. This will affect so many things, and it'll affect electronics severely unless you've paid these companies have paid the Trump price, basically. I think Apple has done that to, you know, not be as affected.
It is hard to say because I am not as familiar with worldwide supply chain type things, so I don't know exactly where we will be hardest hit. I know that there's a lot of electronic parts that are made in elsewhere in the world. If you're going to impose tariffs, basically, we're just going to see this kind of like tit for tat behavior for a bit until people calm down. And I've been waiting for us to hit some kind of breaking point for a while, and I don't know that we're going to hit it soon, which is just really annoying for me because I'm like, I need this to be over and now. That's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. I think I think some of our other writers like Dan Cooper, who have looked at EVs kind of from a distance, they feel as if, you know, there's a lot of Chinese EVs that are, you know, as brands that are gaining in strength, but yet you think of American brands as like leaders in the automobile space. And so are the tariffs meant to sort of stifle that international competition? Or, you know, like support local, blah, blah, blah. I don't
partially,
know.
Partially.
Right, partially.
You don't really think of American car makers, though, as leaders in the automobile space. I will tell you that.
Aside
from like Tesla, yeah. Like everybody else has been in trouble for a long, long time.
Right, especially since, credit crunch? When was it that all the car companies in Detroit became like a troubled space, troubled industry?
I mean, 2008 was a big one, but I don't know. It's pick your crisis. True. For the car companies in America. They've gone through so many things. I want to add on to this. Acer president or CEO Jason Chen says he also plans to increase prices by 10%. I think that'll be worldwide. But by 10%, anticipating tariff charges and things for their devices. So basically, I think this is the price range you can expect. You can expect electronics, a lot of imported things or things that rely on imported hardware, to be more expensive by 10 to 25%, even more, depending on like how these companies go. So I don't know, folks. They've been talking about these tariffs for a while. They're a terrible idea. I don't think we've done a full breakdown on them, but the basic idea is that the country importing, you know, that the country bringing this stuff in will have to pay higher fees to the countries sending them out. So anyway, it's going to be bad. It's going to be real, real bad.
The cost gets passed to the consumer.
Ultimately, the cost gets passed to the consumer. So it does not mean like if you put a tariff on Chinese, stuff coming from China, it's not China that's going to be paying that. It's the American companies bringing the stuff in. So either way, consumers pay more. Real, real weird situation we have out here. If you need something soon, because I've been talking to people about this, looking for, you want a new fridge? You want to upgrade some things? I literally just, my wife and I were planning a remodel for our kitchen for like a year. Like we were going to do IKEA. Are we going to do all these other companies? And then the drum stuff started happening. I was like, oh crap. This is, everything is just going to be crazier. So we like accelerated and did that in like a month in January because we knew where prices were going to go. If you're looking to buy an EV, those EV credits, that whole program may just disappear. So
yeah, I'm surprised it's still going to pay out.
It would take probably a lot of work for them to like dismantle the way it works right now, but that's not going to stick around for very long. So, hey, you can lock in a cheap EV lease or a cheap EV, loan or something and get those credits if you're looking for this stuff. The leases have gotten crazy too. Mm. We should have a chat about that at some point. But anyway, things are going to get more expensive. Good luck with that, America, world, all of humanity. Let's talk about Humane's AI pin, which I know you love so much, Sherlyn. Hey, guess what? This wonderful product, which has no problems at all, it's going to stop working soon. I think February 28th is the date. They're just going to stop working.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So funny. I just can't. I'm sorry. I think it's really funny. Okay. I'm going to give a bit of context to this, which is that not only is it happening it's not happening out of nowhere, right? Basically, Humane's been looking for a buyer for a while. It, you know, priced itself at, I think, $1 billion long ago. And it was when the reviews were
valued at like $1 billion with their funding and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And they had like some really exorbitant valuations of themselves. We don't know who did the I don't know who did the valuation, but like it seemed extremely high and led me to think that they might have a lot of IP. They might have a lot of like software features under the hood that they're working on. But the Humane AI pin was like clearly not a great product. I mean, it was a fire hazard at some point with the stupid battery chargers. So what happened was that after looking for a buyer for a while and HP was named as one of the interested parties or the potential buyers, finally, I think the sale actually went through, but the price is like substantially lower than the $1 billion valuation from like back in the thick of the reviews of the AI pin. I believe it's somewhere closer to like $170 million that was paid.
$116
million. $116 million.
To HP, a company that doesn't know what to do with any of this technology.
Gosh,
These stories are that they've raised around $230 million. So almost, almost half of the money they raised. Mm. And that money is going back to the VCs who are just going to take a big loss on this whole thing. Not going to the Humane founders, most likely. Just a sad end to a super hyped, useless product.
Can you imagine being Humane and thinking like, okay, well, you know, our first product, it didn't work out so well, but I think we can find a buyer. Let's set something up with Sam. Let's set something up with like all of these other big name companies, and OpenAI doesn't want it. Meta doesn't want it. All of these other companies like on the A-list don't want it. How embarrassing must it be to be like, we sold HP for half of our valuation.
Well, those the co-founders, like, they bounce. They bounce, like, after the failures started happening, right? Sherlyn, I don't know if you followed their saga, but you talked to them ahead of
the meetings. It was a headless company just trying to look for a buyer?
I talked to them. I got the sense that they seemed like down to earth, but you know, I'm always very easily taken in by people. It's like, don't put me near a cult leader. I will just join a cult.
They were down to earth in the like very Silicon Valley way of like, oh yes, we have observed Steve Jobs and we know how to talk to people.
Well, and that's the crazy thing. They were probably like, okay, yeah, let's set something up with Apple too. Like we could just go back to Apple, right? No.
Nobody wants your garbage, man.
I don't know enough to like talk about the situation that was happening because I don't even remember that they left. So I really don't know. But I just wanted to point out that like the whole turning it off in 10 days thing, like you will no longer be able to use this thing that you paid $700 for. I don't believe they're issuing refunds fully. It would just become a complete useless brick, except you can still ask it to tell you its battery level.
Cool.
After you
Excellent.
Cannot use it anymore.
So at a certain point, like Silicon Valley is all about pride, like over everything. So man, this has just gotta hurt for the humane AI founders.
I think the horrible reviews and the fact that people were making fun of it nonstop after the reviews, I think that was the thing. That's the real hurt of pride. And these folks like left the company and I'm sure they feel bad about it. Like the you know, former Apple engineers that were working on it. One of those people, like they keep getting references, like one of the lead early iPhone designers too. Smart people. But I think this is such an over-designed and not well thought out product that I'm not surprised this happened. All right, let's move on from a failed product to something that we don't actually know what's going to happen, and that's quantum computing. This week, Microsoft announced the Majorana 1 quantum computing chip, which it says is using a new kind of superconductor called a topoconductor or topological superconductor, which is essentially... it can create these things called Majoranas. They have been like in existence in research for a while. It's a state of matter that's not a solid, a liquid, or a gas. So whenever I start talking about quantum computing stuff, it just feels like magic. Like essentially that's what it is. You know, like computers work on binary systems of like on and off, you know, zeros and ones. Quantum computing, where it rely on qubits, which exist in superstates. So they could either be on or off. It is purely quantum. It's sort of like, it's literally like thinking about like the way quantum physics works. That's kind of why this stuff is just hard to think about. Anyway, the idea here is that this chip will essentially let people create more qubits and more stable qubits. And if eventually we can have enough stable qubits, you can build an actual quantum computer, which can do really complex work. So here's a quote from our story by Mariella Moon. A million qubit machine could lead to self-healing materials that can repair cracks in planes, Microsoft said, or to catalysts that can break down all types of plastic pollutants into valuable byproducts. It's like a whole new stage of computing that could do extreme levels of processing, dealing with problems we've never even really thought about before. But like this is all such early, it's all such an early state right now. Like we don't know where any of this is going to go. But it is wild to think about the idea of a computer that just that can rely on a chip that is relying on like, you know, quantum states rather than binary bits.
I mean, the thing that you just mentioned sounded like science fiction in its own way. Like what they're
doing
is they're using the quantum computing processing power to figure out, I don't know, like simulate chemistry or something to eventually get us to like self-healing materials. It's just nuts. It sounds like the beginning of the sci-fi movie of the tech company that are like, wow, we invented this new state of matter. I hope it doesn't fall into the wrong hands.
It's essentially, was it the Coppola movie? What was that called? Megalopolis.
Oh.
It's essentially Megalopolis.
It took you that
new
much
state of
Googling
material that can save
to
the world.
Remember Megalopolis. That says something, doesn't it?
Yeah. So anyway, Microsoft says it'll take years before this really amounts to anything. The chip is one thing, but they need to do a lot of work to get the materials to actually build this chip and produce, I don't know, eventually produce some sort of supercomputer. Almost this time last year, they had other quantum computing news, is that they had a new technique to like build more stable qubits. We're getting there eventually. I don't know, but I don't know. Will we have a functional society by then? Who knows? Who knows about any of this? Let's go right into, I know something you've been thinking about, Trillin, Amazon's devices event. Is there, real quick, anything you want to mention? That's February 26th. I know we're all gearing up and so excited to write about what Amazon has in store.
I mean, what do you think Amazon might have? I think there's been a long, like, tease from them now about this next-gen A-word assistant. I'm just not going to say the word in case anyone's playing this on their speakers. But yeah, they're... or assistant, and it's supposed to get a lot smarter, but we wonder, because the name is Devices and Services Event, it might also have some new Echo products. It might have Echo Buds, it might have Echo speakers. We just don't know. We really know nothing, but it is happening February 26th. Like you said, we're gearing up to cover it. It's going to be quite a mess, but come to Engadget.com. We will have a proper live blog. We will, you know, I mean, there's not going to be a stream that we know of that you can watch, so following our live blog or one of our competitors, I guess, is one of the best ways to kind of follow along if that's the sort of thing you want. So
I wouldn't recommend our competitors. Why don't
I recommend anyone? Nobody's obligated. Follow ours is my preferred.
We're the only source of news on the Amazon event happening February
26th. I would acknowledge that there are competitors, but that we are probably better.
Yeah. Is there anything you're actually excited for, or are we just like trudging along and doing this thing because Amazon's like, we have new shit?
Oh, I'm just excited to see Panos again. That's all. Panos Panay, my bestie now. Did you know this?
Yeah. Your bestie. I mean, are you going in person?
Yes,
I
don't know. It's in New York. I am attending.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Panos remembers. You'll get the creepy Panos conversation.
Just like Diet Coke, sir.
Panos is very much, you know those people with like mystic eyes, like people like a magician. Looks like they practice, magic in their spare time. Panos has that like vibe.
I think that you could say that he's a mentalist.
He's a mentalist.
He's the sort of person who remembers things about you that you are surprised because he just meets so many people. And it's probably because he has an assistant keeping binders on absolutely everyone.
Oh, they all do. All the PR people do.
Most definitely.
There's a dossier on each of us on every single PR person.
That's how this works. But anyway, new Amazon event. I honestly cannot think of like anything I'm actually excited about from this company or interested in seeing. I don't know, the robots are never going to do anything. I use like Echo devices every day. They're throughout my house. But I don't know. I don't want a more conversational Echo. Every time it's like, hey, by the way, did you want to buy this thing that you used to buy? This thing you like is on sale. Shut up. I didn't talk to you. Don't say anything to me, robot, until I talk to you. Those sorts of things are just not great. So anyway, February 26th, we'll see more Amazon stuff only at Engadget.com. Let's move on to what we're working on. Hey, I put up a review of the NVIDIA's RTX 5070 Ti. Pretty good GPU. It's especially after coming off of reviewing the $2,000 5090.
Yeah,
this is $749. It is more accessible. It is still very expensive, but I think like a more accessible mid-range GPU runs 4K well, especially with DLSS and the multi-frame generation stuff, and it does it for not $2,000. So that's why I like this one. It also has 16 gigabytes of VRAM, and I think for a lot of people that's actually going to be the main hook if you want to play in 4K. The 5070, the plain 5070 is the other one we're excited about. That one's priced at $549 and it only has 12 gigabytes of RAM. So that could be a problem. That could be a problem with like 4K textures in the future. Maybe not right now, but it could be a limiting device at some point. These prices also, by the way, entirely theoretical, because if you find a 5070 Ti, it's most likely not going to be $749. It's most likely going to be hundreds more. Best Buy and other places have already listed them for like $900. So good luck out there,
yeah.
GPU buyers. It's hell.
It bleak.
You got to be fast. You got to be lucky. It's all those things. Or you buy a system, you buy a pre-built system that has a new GPU in it. I don't know. Let us know, like, if you're looking for a new video card, what is your plan? Are you waiting for the new AMD stuff? Drop me an email, podcast@engadget.com.
On my end, a lot of the stuff I do is, like, kind of behind the scenes. But, yeah, planning and doing the Amazon event, the iPhone launch, iPhone 16e launch was also a lot of stuff for us to do. Probably going to review something soon. You know, I wrote an article maybe 2 weeks ago about the New York and New Jersey transit authorities or transit organizations adding these QR code based services, I guess. It's an accessibility feature that would allow people who are deaf or hard of hearing access to sign language interpreters through their devices or through whatever devices is available at the customer service booths at these transit places. So if you're interested, read it. Amidst everything, there's some writing. That's my life.
It's always good to see you writing, Shirlin. I know you're stuck in edit hell much of the time and also doing management stuff now. So yeah, support Shirlin when she writes about stuff. And hopefully you'll be writing about more stuff soon. Yeah. I hope it doesn't kill you, Shirlin, because it's going to be, I know. It's going to be bad times.
I know, it's tough.
Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. Anything you want to shout out?
I just, not like a recommendation because people probably have already been watching, but like I've been watching Severance. I've been watching all the stuff that's been good. I've been watching Handmaid's Tale because it's too real. It's coming up with a new season.
Too real.
But, you know, if you haven't seen these already, I recently watched these series for the first time. The Station 11 on HBO is really, really good. I really enjoy that.
I love Station 11.
Oh God, yeah. It's really, really good. I think you've recommended it to maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and I finally got around to watching it. So that's how far behind I am.
It is such it was a pandemic story, I think, before the pandemic, but it's a great response to, I don't know, society trying to survive after that.
Yeah. Station 11 is a good one if you haven't seen it yet. How about you, Dev?
I want to shout out real quick. If you like ER, show ER. They sort of rebooted ER again, but they're not calling it ER. It's called The Pit. It's on Max, and also once again stars Noah Wiley as an ER doctor, also by some of the people who used to work on ER. It's just kind of funny, whatever happened with the show. Clearly there was plans to reboot ER, and NBC just did not want to play that. John Wells, who used to work on ER and West Wing, helped bring this back. Anyway, this is a really good show. It is very much it's very much like The Bear in that it is a high intensity, stressful thing where stressful things are happening all the time. It's sort of like ER meets 24 as well, because it is technically real time. They're covering a whole day in an ER. So every episode is 1 hour there. There's new patients. There's patients who've been there for a while and they're still dealing with them. I think it's really well written. I really like the characters. I think you'd like it, Shirlin.
I never got into ER, so I wouldn't assume.
I think you would like this, though, because it's very much competence porn. The thing about any medical show is that these are smart people who know what they're doing and they're good at their jobs. And also there's a cast of new people coming in. But even if they're interns, they still have skills because they've been learning about medicine for years.
Opposite of House, where they're just guessing every episode.
Well, you know, House is sort of it was the same thing too. Oh, House is such a genius. He'll come up with all sorts of stuff. Opposite of House, definitely it's ER.
Scrubs.
There's other shows like this.
Grey's Anatomy.
Sort of like this, but it wasn't there. Scrubs was never about people really being good at their jobs. Right. Occasionally they would do that. Grey's Anatomy was never really
about. Not
enough about
Rhonda and the medicine. Sex and sleeping around. No.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But anyway, I like a good show.
Yeah, yeah.
I like a show about people who are smart and know what they're doing. And The Pit is a great one. So I think it's fantastic if you want something stressful to take your mind off the stress of every day.
Thanks.
It's actually, that's kind of how my brain works. The Bear actually worked really well for me when things were really stressful a couple of years ago. I was like, oh yeah, I relate to all this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel this pressure. I feel all these things. Anyway, The Pit, real good. Yeah. It's on Max, the one to watch for HBO.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Blue Sky and all the fun places. And I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me fun things to do with magnets that are not MagSafe, you can send them to me at Shirlin Instagram on Threads. I'm still there hanging by a thread. Or email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on whatever you are getting your podcast on. Shout out to everyone for sticking with us through the live stream technical glitches today. We really are grateful for Simon B, Daniel Diaz, Declan, Goth Tech, who said bye, Lucky Dog Podcast, Ruindig, all of you who are here today. Dude Named Charlie, thanks for joining us. And join us on the live streams Thursday mornings at about 10:45, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Engadget YouTube channel.